At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America, this is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Rolling through Old School on a Monday, Nebraska football 3-0. That is more wins than the two teams we're about to talk about combined. This is Old School, brought to you by, of course, the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese. Jay, Notre Dame remains ranked. They've played twice in 3 weeks and lost both times. You know who else has lost twice? The Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
First time they've had a 3-game losing streak in Patrick Mahomes' career, once you include the Super Bowl from last year. And first time they've started a season out 0-2 with 15 at the helm. Who has more reasons for concern, or if you want to take it this way, who has more reasons to be optimistic that their 0-2 start will turn around between the Notre Dame fighting Marcus Freeman Golden Irish and the Kansas City Chiefs?
I think concern is with Notre Dame because they lost both games the same way, very tight games, obviously, and it could be encouraging, but the Miami game really wasn't as close as the scoreboard said, but you know, then obviously Texas A&M game, you had control of the game, and obviously Nate Borkature was able to represent at the end. And when you look at Notre Dame's schedule, Purdue game becomes a little bit more of a grind, considering that Purdue has shown the, you know, they're 2-1. They played USC somewhat tough. They played USC tougher than people would project. You know, you have a defensive minded coach in Barry Odom. Notre Dame's offense, for the most part, has been, you know, average at best, right? Or at least not consistent. Then they go down to Arkansas.
Woo! Weird one.
Right? Boise State, North Carolina State, USC, at Boston College, Navy, at Pitt, Syracuse, at Stanford. This could be a season that where they're saying, like, Marcus Freeman got lucky and signed his contract before the offseason.
But you can see them beating Purdue. You can see them beating Arkansas.
I can see them beating everybody else on their schedule, but I can see them losing to everybody as well. I mean, most likely probably not Navy, right? Not Stanford. Okay, so
that's, on the road. Never know.
They would have to try harder at losing that game than winning.
It's the Andrew Luck effect. Watch out.
I'm going to give them Navy and Stanford. Boise looks horrible.
So up to 3-9. Boston College.
And Purdue. I think they're desperate. They'll beat Purdue. Arkansas is going to be a hard game. Mm-hmm. And it's 11 o'clock down in Arkansas. NC State, probably. USC at home. That's probably an L. At night. At Boston College. Boston College has
off a bye week.
And Boston College has a better offense than projected. And at Pitt, which is always a tough place to play. And then they got a tough Syracuse team coming in there. Might be a 6-6 season.
At this point,
foregone conclusion of going to being at large from the group of five.
To hoping for bowl eligibility. The offense has looked fine for Notre Dame for the most part. Obviously some early season struggles against Miami, but you put up 41 points on really anyone from the SEC.
Yeah.
That's not nothing, right? I think CJ Carr has looked fine so far in his Notre Dame debut. We can see why they went with him, but you know, you see Xavier Watts gone. Maybe he's there on that play to Borkature on the back end to erase that. He's not there anymore. Pass rush hasn't gotten home for Notre Dame really at all year long. I still think they get bowl eligible. I'm not sold on North Carolina State.
I think they make a bowl game, but it's not going to be the type of season that they want.
But
I think they play. I think they played above their head last year.
Who played more above their head last year, Indiana or Notre Dame?
Notre Dame.
Really?
Indiana's got a good team.
Notre Dame is really good too, though.
They had good players.
Notre Dame might have had the best player in either of those two teams.
Talking about Love?
Love or Xavier Watts. I mean, take your pick between those two guys.
I guess I would say Indiana played above it, but I think Indiana is probably a little bit better. They were better long term, obviously.
You trust Cignetti to build a more sustainable product than Freeman?
No, I just think it's just a down year. And I think expectation, you know, sometimes you get close and they're like, okay, it's rinse and repeat. You know, Notre Dame lost a lot. You know, Riley Leonard, the way he played, they kind of really was able to go to that quarterback run game, really paid dividends for him, along with Love. And defensively, they were pretty solid. I think they lost a corner or two to the pros and different players like that. So you lose that, and then now you're the games that you were, you know, they won this type of game last year down in College Station. They lost a shootout this year.
But it was the defense last year. It was 23-13 last year in College Station. This was 44-41, right. 41-40.
Forget the players that go to the pros. Al Golden's gone.
Mm-hmm. Royals Award winner.
And his style of defense is gone. Mm-hmm. He was more in your face, man-to-man. This is kind of more zone. And obviously that allows I wouldn't say anemic passing game from Texas A&M, but an average passing game, passing quarterback. Not to have his way, but to be able to navigate through a Notre Dame defense pretty easily, which is significantly different than last year.
Mud Dog wants to know, Jay, what do you think Indiana's record would be this year if they'd played Miami and A&M to open up?
That's a good question. 1-1.
Probably still lose to Miami, find a way to outshoot out A&M.
Here's what Indiana does defensively. Really, really good. And especially what they did last year, they scheme up their blitzes in their run. Their whole thing is it's timely schemes, and their continuity between the staff is good. It's kind of like Detroit was with their two coordinators that been together. Nobody's really plucked off their staff yet.
Been through the mud together, know each other.
And they know exactly what they want. They kind of really, the continuity there is there. That's what they really do good. Or do well defensively, which would have helped them against Texas A&M. I don't think Marcel Reed throws for 360 yards against anybody for the rest of his career.
More the dual threat guy than the drop back passer. So I think that's a fair take.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. 360 is a different animal.
Yeah. I mean,
that was a nice play to Borgetter at the end, though. Pump fake with the guy in his face, get around him, and still drop it in the bucket like that.
I mean, he had 20 incompletions, and he had 360 yards on 17 completions. I mean, it was
that's 20 yards to pass.
It was boom or bust. Now you were busting a lot. So, I mean,
the flip side of that then for Notre Dame is Jeremiah Love's not even averaging 4 yards a pop.
Yeah.
That's a problem. Now, Jadarian Price as the back, I mean, 18 carries for him at 6.3 yards per carry. You have two good ones, right? They're kind of Penn State light in that way, where you probably take Allen and Singleton ahead of those two guys. I am a little surprised, though, Jay. I mean, you look at, just overall, they've ran the ball 31 times a game on average, or passed it 31 times a game on average, ran it 33.5 times a game, which isn't a huge difference. I would have expected that to lean a little bit more to the rushing side of the ball, except then you take into account game circumstance. You've been down.
Yeah.
You found yourself trailing. You weren't able to run the clock out or ice the game against A&M, got up by 6, and then that funky extra point attempt. Yeah. Again, another little special teams thing. That what was the issue with Notre Dame last year? Didn't have a great field goal kicker. Dude was nailed at the end of the year when they needed him to be. Well, something goes wrong in that operation. Then you don't have the playmakers on defense keep up with tempo and what A&M needs to do. But Notre Dame also hasn't been playing from ahead, where it could put its freshman quarterback in more advantageous positions because the defense has gotten them down early.
Yeah, it's definitely a different year. And I mean, you know, you could come back with the same team. I would say, you know, same team personnel wise, it'd be a different team. And a lot of these guys are facing, you know, some of the, you know, great play of the year before. Some in their revisionist history was like, okay, we'll pull this game out. And you felt very comfortable with, I think the Riley Leonard experience gelled very quickly. I mean, obviously the Northern Illinois loss, but then I think the ability to bounce back was instantaneous, and then he played well too. So then now you got a freshman quarterback. He didn't have that experience. You got to think Riley Leonard was, before he got hurt against Notre Dame.
It was that game. Yeah.
He was, I wouldn't say a front runner for a Heisman, but he was a,
he was in the
closest thing Duke has had, it from a quarterback standpoint, is an unstoppable force. And then he goes to Notre Dame and he pairs with that, you know, probably a little bit better and seasoned offensive line. They do one. I think, you know, I think Notre Dame lost one of their linemen in camp this year.
Jagusa.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So that
who's their NFL guy.
Right. So that hurts as well.
Plus Rocco gone, plus the center gone.
Yeah. So, I mean, you, that lifeline of that team is gone. Mm-hmm. And then you got to think on the other side, last year they had Xavier Watts, who was, all, as we saw just last night, he was the ultimate eraser.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to Notre Dame and not Nebraska.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
And I know why.
Yeah. Wildly unfortunate on a number of fronts. Talk about the lifeline being gone, Jay. Mm-hmm. Same thing for the Kansas City Chiefs. Mahomes is still there, but talent around him on offense, he hasn't been able to elevate it. Offensive line has been hit or miss. Defense is still solid, but maybe lacking a bit of that pass rush difference maker as well. What's wrong with the Chiefs, and why are you less concerned for them than you were Notre Dame?
I'm less concerned. I mean, this is just part of being, they weren't the Super Bowl champs, but it's part of being a Super Bowl champion. And it's just part of being on the Chiefs. Just, you're going to get everybody's best shot. You know, Philadelphia has a little bit of an edge as far as talent wise. They know you, you know them. And then you start the game, start the season off with a game against a, you know, interdivision game against a tough playoff team like the Chargers in Brazil. And the Chargers are fully loaded as far as like all their players.
It's week one. They got a chance to gear up for you.
And that's the best thing you're going to get. Now the Chiefs aren't as talented as they had been, right? And obviously you never expect Travis Kelce to drop that pass
2 weeks in a row. Yeah. I mean, they could be 2-0 if he has two more catches.
Right. And that's what you never expect now.
But should you expect it given where he's at in his career? Is he to that point where you can't bank on him catching?
I mean, I think you're going to, I mean, I like this year's Travis Kelce more versus last year's. Okay. I think he's in it this year.
Okay.
And I think it's frustrating because I think that look at it right now. Okay, you got Tyquan Thornton, young. Hollywood Brown, young.
And injured and out of the lineup.
Right. Juju Smith-Schuster, kind of like...
retread.
Right. Dude, that's an extreme... You're talking about skill positions. Take Travis Kelce out there. You'd like to have him on a pitch count, right?
Yeah.
But
they won a Super Bowl with essentially the same crew, though. Valdez-Scantling...
Rice isn't here. Okay, but you got to think. Was Scantley and Juju Smith-Schuster. Those were the two, like, those are the better years, those two.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had the emergence of Rice as the true number one get open guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had Kelce at a clip that was serious. And then you
McKinnon
had
McKinnon as a dark horse.
McKinnon as, like, kind of the scat back, and he was a matchup problem. And then you had Pacheco that was just beating the ground up, and your offensive line was it was a different team. And Hollywood Brown hasn't been what they expected when they got him, and Worthy's out. So you got to think they are playing with, or fighting with, one hand behind the back right now. Defense is good. I think there's something off between, this is just my opinion, between Carl Loftus and Chris Jones. Carl Loftus just got paid.
Yeah.
Chris Jones wants to get paid.
Gotten paid a couple times, but not this last offseason.
He wants to get paid. Who's the guy on defense? Who's the Patrick Mahomes on defense?
It's always been Chris Jones for them.
And who just got paid?
Chris Jones.
Right. So he's thinking, okay, let's just look at Carlos's, right?
But neither did Tranquil. Or not Tranquil, I mean McDuffie on the outside, right? They didn't get come to an extension. He's been the dude outside for them.
Well, who goes hand in hand?
Pass rush and DBs.
So when you think about Karloftis, right? He had 8 sacks last year. And he came in, he's at 6, he's at 10.5, he had 8. He's doing his job, right? But internally, they're probably, you know, and I think one of their defensive ends left last year from via free agency, which is when Chris Jones is looking, you know, he's looking at the whole landscape. He's in McDuffie. McDuffie's like, all right, I'll bet on myself, probably be franchise next year. Mm-hmm. Chris Jones might be gone or franchise.
He's 35 right now.
Right, but that's why he wants it, and he wants another, you know,
it's contract. Sorry, 31.
Yeah. He wants another contract, and so I don't know if it's like strife, but I think it's a unique look. They've won so much and won so many Super Bowls. They've had long seasons. You got some guys that want to kind of, you know, Chris Jones wants to get one more big contract. And, you know, the Chiefs didn't take care of him, or, you know, at least to what he wanted. So I just think there's some frustration that they haven't lost like this. And last year they won all those one score games.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of expect it, but you can win a Super Bowl winning one score games. And then you could be not in the playoffs, not losing half of those games the next year. And that's the crazy thing about it. You got to think it's a one-score game against the Chargers, one-score game against the Eagles.
You're one play away from Chris Jones. He goes under instead of over, you know, kind of freelances.
Yeah.
Maybe to some of what you're saying. Yeah. Hey, I'm still Chris Jones. You put me outside. I'm the dude on this defense. I'm going to go make a play. Backfires and bites him on top of a Kelce drop. And then here this last week, same thing against the Eagles. Did a decent job. I mean, Jalen Hurts, I think, still has, what, 2 completions over 10 yards all year? Defense did its part. You hold the Eagles to 20 points. That's much better than you did against the same team 7 months ago. Again, I know it's not the exact same guys, but the offense was the issue. I mean, 21 and 17 points, averaging 19 points per game. That's unacceptable when you have arguably the greatest quarterback of his generation, who's maybe not sliding back into the pack with his performance, but the results are.
Well, I mean, they have to reinvent themselves. They're going to have to reinvent this Chiefs offense, but they can't do it until they get that full arsenal of weapons. That's why it's so important for the off-the-field stuff to match the on-field and on-the-field to match the off-the-field. Because that window can close on Kansas City very quickly because Rice and them were doing whatever. You had the Tyreek Hill situation, which obviously it looks like they knew a lot more about the Tyreek Hill that we didn't know about before, so it really wasn't worth it when they could have really paid him in his prime, and you might not even be having this conversation right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what they've also been able to do is kind of do a little bit of what the Eagles have been able to do. They've been able to go get bargain guys a couple years ago that still had a year or two left of good years, and then obviously Juju went off and got paid, and obviously Scantley as well went off and got paid. At the right time, those options aren't there. They thought they got it with Hollywood Brown, then they drafted Worthy. Essentially, you drafted the same player you just signed in free agency. Both of them are injury prone, whether it's friendly fire or not. And so they're just facing a little bit of a challenge now. But I think right now, okay, they got the next three games are crucial before they play the Lions, right? So you play the Giants, you got to win.
Host the Ravens.
You host the Ravens. You feel like you can hang with the Ravens. Just because defensively you can do well.
Baltimore hasn't beat you like that.
They haven't beat you like that. So if you can get to 2-2, you know you can go down to Jacksonville, which will be a hard test, and beat Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you like your chance against the Lions, and then you could be right back in
business. Short week against the Lions, though.
You still like your chances. The Lions have chinks in their armor. I know they played the Bears and got some get back, but I think this is the time where the Lions are
gettable. Mm-hmm.
Plus, you're the Chiefs, and you got Patrick Mahomes.
Worst case scenario for the Chiefs after the Lions game is 0-6 on the table. Are they 2-4?
2-4. Like if they lost to the Lions, yeah, 2-4.
Is 4-2 best case? 3-3.
4-2. Just,
I think 3-3 is most likely. Is 4-2 achievable?
Yeah. But the great thing about, or a good thing that the Chiefs can do, they can turn it around just like that.
After that Lions game, then, to your point, host the Raiders. Ought to get that one. Commanders, hope that's an entertaining matchup. Go to the Bills.
Yeah.
Yep, I tend to agree there. Then you go to the Broncos, host the Colts, turn around short week, go down to Dallas. Then you get Texans at home. Stay home, actually, host the Chargers, go to the Titans. You play on Christmas again, short week against the Broncos, and then go to the Raiders to close out the regular season. It's looking like this is a 10-7 team, 11-6. Are there 12 wins? Can the Chiefs pull off 12-3?
It's not as easy as it looks, though.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm saying this is, if I'm the Chiefs, I'm shooting for 11 wins.
Yeah.
One seed is pretty much out the window at this point, given the first two losses. You're going to be in a dogfight for the division. You got to beat the Chargers, even though it's going to be, it'll be a home game. You got to beat them. I mean, can they beat Denver both times? They ought to beat Oakland both times.
Chiefs got to just worry about this game against the Giants. They can't let Russell Wilson do what he did against the Cowboys.
Oh, boy.
So, I mean, they got to think one game at a time. And that's what they're probably focusing on. One practice at a time, one meeting at a time, you know, one game at a time. They got to win this next game. They got to really, they can't worry about where they're at. They got to take it as it comes. It's new territory for them. You got a lot of guys that have had a lot of success and some rings and offseason accolades and obviously and all that. This is a new territory for the Chiefs,
and they
have the leadership to battle through it, though.
Sorry, the obvious comparison we've heard a lot is, oh, look at the Chiefs reinventing themselves like the Patriots did.
They ain't reinventing nothing yet. Yeah.
Not to the same level, and tougher division. Think about the division that New England ran for the better part of 20 years, I mean 15 years.
Yeah, it was
Buffalo just finally popped up. The Jets had those 2 years under Rex Ryan, and Miami was just Miami. The Patriots didn't have the same level of challenge in that AFC East that it seems like the AFC West has built toward. And I love that for the NFL, but it makes things a little more difficult for Kansas City to reinvent on the fly multiple times like New England
did. Yeah, the AFC East, when the New England, this is not taking anything away from New England. It's the AFC East franchise's fault where they beat themselves before they even played. And so New England was just always, you know, hold and serve, home field advantage, really good, go on the road, beat the Chiefs a couple times. Win a couple Super Bowls, and then finally here comes Josh Allen, and then they get close. So the Chiefs, yeah, they're in a little bit of trouble, but I think you got the dude at quarterback. You got a focused and energized Travis Kelce. I don't think Andy Reid's a great coach, so I think they'll get it going. So anyway, all right, we'll take a break, okay? 323 area code. We'll get into Michigan, all right? We'll get into Michigan. Talk a little bit about it, then we'll just dive into Michigan.
How about it?
It's going to be tough. I mean,
it's not going to be easy, but it's on the table.
Yeah.
Jay Foreman, Austin Orman, Old School, back in a sec.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Rolling right along through Old School, this segment of the show brought to you as always by the great people at Heartland of Nebraska Windows. They're based out of Hallam, Nebraska. They offer a free estimate, full window replacements, all vinyl triple pane windows, and a lifetime warranty on everything while keeping their prices affordable. Heartland of Nebraska Windows is locally and family owned with their own team of installers. Give Heartland of Nebraska Windows a call today for more info at 402-430-3852, or you can visit them online at heartlandofnebraskawindows.com. Austin Orman here, Jay Foreman there. You want to be a part of the show, you can, 402-464-5685. Jay, is it time to dive into Michigan? Are we starting that conversation off?
Yeah, why not?
Let's do it. You said the California area code had something to ask on that, on the text line?
Is it 323?
I believe so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's like, he didn't want to talk NFL, he wanted to talk about Michigan. I mean, I think... You know, look, they'll be the best team we'll play. I don't think they're the best team in the nation like we've seen before. Be more than capable you know, opponent where you're going to have to go out and beat them. I don't know how much of a downgrade is or upgrade or downgrade that Sherrone Moore is not there. I think, you know, I could see them playing. I could see them thinking like, okay, we'll play worse, or, you know, because he's, you know, he's a great offensive line coach, good recruiter. Not sure about him on a head coach yet, but I've seen him do some good things. And, you know, obviously the way they ended the season was probably really good. So I think it's definitely a gettable game. But you got to go beat them. I don't think you're going to – I mean, if you think that you're going to roll out there and it's going to be the same speed the last couple of weeks, you know, you're in for a rude awakening. But I think you're going to have to just try to, you know, do a lot of good on good and just practice with the right intensity, and then obviously make sure, you know, you just know your assignments and go out there and let it loose.
You've talked about a bunch of different teams a bunch of different times about how important it is to get that winning feeling, the confidence mm-hmm. that comes from winning. Matt Rhule's been careful to caveat, he was again today, about, yep, it's the Big Ten, things are going to get harder, no disrespect to the opponents that we played, but Big Ten's the best league in college football, yada, yada, yada. I think from the fans' perspective, it's, is Nebraska prepared, given that they haven't faced anyone of Michigan's caliber? Without putting words in your mouth, I've heard you say a number of times, yeah, the caliber of competition that you're playing matters, but so does winning. For a program at Nebraska that hasn't necessarily had that winning feeling, confidence isn't everything, but it's a big part of it that this program has been lacking in years past, going into a pivotal kind of measuring stick game in years past, like we have coming up on Saturday for Nebraska against Michigan.
Yeah, I think, it's a catch-22. I mean, we haven't won a lot around here, and part of it, you know, is, like we talked about early, is eliminating a lot of the self-inflicted wounds and mistakes, and so they've done that. So, you know, you go from 5 to 6 or 7 wins last year, you know, if you count the bowl game, and you're looking for more this year. So the winning feeling and what you need to do is there. And I don't think it's the winning feeling. It's the things that you have to do in order to win. Mm-hmm. A lot of sacrifice. You got to do a lot of the little things, you know, monotonous. Where it can become monotony and stuff like that. But then you got to, you know, accentuate them and make it like you live it. And so that's a hard thing to do in this day and age of individual type of football and their, you know, views on how things should work. But it's the only way you're going to be able to win. And, you got to play who's on your schedule. You got to play well. And the only thing Nebraska's been able to do is just obviously beat the teams they're supposed to beat. And that's what you do. And Michigan's 2-1. You know, however you think they looked against Oklahoma, that's probably what you expected to see them. And, you know, as far as their best, you know, which is the second half, you just got to expect that's what you're going to, you know, get from Michigan. And then from there, you got to go out there and beat them. I think you're going to probably face the most resistance. As far as, like, you know, across the line, but you got to keep, you know, plugging away. I mean, they're going to make plays. We're going to make plays. We just got to make the plays, you know, when we need to make them, and then obviously take advantage. They'll give you a chance. I mean, it's a freshman quarterback that, you know, a limited passing tree, you know, a lot of it's going to be play action. So you got to do a really good job of what's called pulling him up, is meaning when he gets outside the tackle, you got to have a guy that's going to contain him. You got to make sure that you cover down, and you got to make sure that you wrap up on him when you get a chance to hit him.
Which is hard to do given that he's 6'4", 230, but doable.
It is, but then he's a big target. But what I mean by that is you know, if he scrambles, you got to make him pay. More importantly, you know, he'll throw in the double coverage, so you got to make plays on the ball. So the more plays that you can make, the simple plays you can make, the more pressure it turns on him. And, you know, you want him to press. You want the play caller from Michigan to press. The reason why I like that, if you make him press, is because if you start out, you know, primarily good against the run, make them into a primarily, like, passing team, you can dictate it. You can dial up some pressures.
Well, and the way to do that is you score first. Score in your first couple possessions, make them go 3 and out or force them to punt at the very least. Because this is still, I think, Jay, a Michigan team that's not as comfortable playing from behind unless it gets to Cincinnati territory, where Michigan says, you know what, this Nebraska defense is good, but we think we have the best athlete on the field. Bryce, just go make plays. Enough thinking, enough scripting, just go play football.
Yeah, that's what they kind of did, you know, this last game. But if the game's tight, that's fine. I like that, because that means we're playing good defensively, and we're just going to assume eventually, you know, Dana and them, they'll figure it out. we start out good defensively, or when we start out good defensively, and then we're playing good against the run, and they just can't, because their big, their game, their defense is predicated on them being able to run the ball. So that means they can dictate the pace. And once you can't dictate the pace, the score does matter. Of course, if we're up 17-0, that's obviously known. But the pressure starts to mount on that sideline because it's not looking like they want to play. So if Nebraska is able to, you know, not only stand up against the run, make some plays like some tackle for losses or like some short yard, you know, gains, and get some, you know, I'd like to see the defense take it upon themselves this week to do what's called, like, we used to have this knockback tackles, right? Where it's like, you know, say I make the initial hit, you got a guy that's going to kind of try to come and punch the ball out. Well, then everybody else just bum rushes him and then you knock him back. That is a mental advantage that you put in their head that we are physically dominating you, you know, after, you know, contact. So if you start to do those things, this starts to wear on that team. And then it starts to wear on Bryce Underwood because those routes and stuff like that aren't as crisp because a lot of them are coming off of play action. So when it's coming off of play action, you're really dictating free releases off of the line for the receivers because they're coming off and acting like they're going to block the safety or, you know, block the corner. Then they're in the route. Well, when it's third and 10, 12 or whatever, and if, especially if we, you know, get them behind the chains.
Cool play action. Don't care.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's fine. Go right ahead.
Have fun.
Yeah.
Do you expect that Michigan will do anything except line up, try to run the ball right at Nebraska until Nebraska proves they can stop it?
I think they'll do. I mean, I think they'll try to do a fair amount of quarterback run game. I think they'll try to do a little.
But either way, it's power straight ahead, right? Nothing cute, nothing frilly. It's
You might see them test our edges a little bit. You know, they might go some jet sweeps and stuff like that. They, you know, they'll do some. You know, the first series or two, the generally, it depends on if they get the ball or not, right? If they receive the ball, they're going to go right on script. They don't, depending on what Nebraska does. They'll either continue along that script or they'll say, okay, let's see if we can pop a big run and take the crowd out of it. See, what you want to do is on the road is you want to take the crowd out of it by either systematically getting first downs or you get a big run, right? Say you break a couple tackles, spin out of it, boom, first down. Their crowd is, their sidelines that, then you're like already on your heels. And even if you get 3 points, like, man, you know,
we just got punched.
We punched back, right? I think they're going to try to make the throws easy for them. So you could think like Nebraska's in zone or man, expect some easy, you know, some hitches or something like that, some slants, you know, some timing routes, you know, something to slow the defensive line down, you know, kind of keep you guessing a little bit. But then I think eventually if they get a couple first down, they're going to line up and, you know, they're not as many, there's not as much, you know, 22 personnel. Now they run 21 personnel with 44. I view him more of an H-back, so somewhat of a tight end. He's kind of like their fullback, and, you know, he's a physical guy. You know, he's a little rocked up little dude. Not a little dude. He's
rocked up big dude.
Yeah, he's, you know, a short little fighter. But so he kind of sets the physical edge. And I think he's a captain. So that's where you'll get 21 personnel with 12 concepts because he can catch it in the flat and stuff like that.
Juice check-ish?
Yeah, but fleet as foot. And then, you know, Klein's right along with everybody else, tight end. He's a safety net. So we'll see what they do. But, you know, Nebraska has got to handle their business first.
That's absolutely what it comes down to. And that's where I would be surprised if Michigan does really anything aside from, hey, Nebraska, stop this. They remember what happened the last time they came here. They don't care that it's not the same names on the back of the jersey. They ran over, around, and through Nebraska for 58 minutes until Josh Fleeks got Nebraska on the scoreboard with the long touchdown run. Nebraska's better than they were in 23. Michigan's not as good as they were in 23.
Yeah.
But Michigan, Jay, I still think, walks around with that, we know who we are, we know what we do well, and especially against a team like Nebraska, who's shown a little bit of that weakness. You know, I'm not saying Nebraska can't stop the run, saying Michigan's going to walk in there forcing Nebraska to stop the run.
Well, they're going to, I mean, look, every team is going to want to run the ball and test you.
I mean, Houston Christian didn't, I mean, really. That way, Akron didn't really.
They ain't even
Maryland, kind of, meh, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, yes, but these type of games,
I guess
blue bloods are going to line up and try to punch you in the face.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is, I guess Michigan is a mature enough program to not get distracted by, oh, hey, look what Bryce did last week.
They're gonna try to see whatever concepts that they can exploit. That's the same thing Nebraska is gonna do. But really, it's gonna come down to, you know, I think Nebraska, it has the personnel to do well against their run game, because I think they're able to kind of, you know, get on the move, but then also have different body types that can get in the backfield and make some plays. I think they're, you know, athletic enough to really, you know, do some stuff and not let them do some damage. And so they just got to tackle well. And then, you know, get Michigan's going to get some false starts and all that. But when you get them in third and six, seven plus, we got to get off the field. We got to get off the field. And when we do that, we get more chances at that defense. I like our chances.
Let's go ahead and take a break here. Talk about Bud Crawford to wrap up the hour and then right back to Michigan at 5. He's Jay. I'm Austin. It's Old School on the Ticket.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Wrapping up hour two of Old School, Austin and Jay with you. This segment brought to you by Love Volleyball Nebraska. Recently rebranded over the summer from Love Volleyball Omaha to Love Volleyball Nebraska. Go to lovb.com today to get your season tickets. Get them for the first time. Renew them. Your chance to see Olympic champions, national champions, and of course, plenty of former Huskers in action. All for Love Volleyball Nebraska. Speaking of Love and Nebraska, Jay, a lot of representation from Bud Crawford for his home state, of course, his home city of Omaha. Your takeaways from Bud Crawford moving up two weight classes, taking down Saul Canelo Alvarez on what that event Saturday.
I mean, he just did what he usually does. Goes in there and handles business, dissects his opponent, and keeps exceeding the outside expectations. But I think Bud was very confident going into this fight. Probably he took a third less of the money. Rightfully so. Canelo's been a household name for a little bit longer and kind of been associated with, was it Danzin or whatever you got to do that sometimes when you want to have a legacy fight and so forth and so on. Now Bud's going to be in the power position, I think, towards the end of, if he continues to fight. I never really thought Bud would win. There's only two ways I thought Canelo would win. One, they would cheat Bud, like a decision, and you line up 100 people, and they're like, "Oh, Bud was the winner." And then the three guys that were judging were like, "Oh, Canelo won by a long shot." And that's happened before.
Yeah.
So I didn't think it would happen because there's not a rematch clause. So I think you're going to get fair and square, right? And I don't think guys look forward to rematches clause anymore because they don't. I think Floyd Mayweather has shown guys the business side to kind of go and plot and just do your stuff and kind of build your resume and then go. And then Bud's old school. He'll fight anybody.
I mean, anywhere, anytime.
Yeah, he'd probably fight today if he had to, and still win. And then I think the only other way that Canelo could have won is if, and I think I mentioned this when we were on old school, is if it was a lot of clinching. And he was significantly better than Bud in the phone booth. That's it. And that's a hard thing to do because Bud's savvy. And he's got long enough arms where you're just not going to be able to overpower him. And so I don't think the size was ever a problem. I never envisioned it because Bud's probably grew up fighting bigger dudes. So that's not going to do anything. But Bud's strong too.
Why are you strong?
Yeah,
but actually strong.
But strong. And I think Bud's a better athlete than Canelo. Like, overall, better athlete. If you just went and took him through the NFL combine, Bud would just wipe the floor with him athletically. That paid dividends because he's significantly quicker, even though Bud's older. Mm-hmm. Canelo in his last two fights looked significantly slower.
Even though he won, got away with it.
But he never was quick.
Right.
So he never could say... You know, there was a time and kind of almost like the towards the end of Pacquiao's prime where one fight he looked a little sluggish, went back to the lab, and then he started blowing through guys for his last little run. Canelo never got that. Now, maybe it's because he was playing, fighting lesser opponents, but Bud just went in there and I think he surprised Canelo of his strength. Canelo had no game plan of how to like counteract. Bud can fight both hands or both ways. He can go
listed southpaw, but he can do whatever.
Yeah, he can do whatever he wants. And the thing about Bud that people don't understand, he can switch in like the middle of a round.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes he does it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I think he has that, I guess, the it factor, unique ability to, like, I think it was whatever fight it was, Bo Mack, when they had him mic'd up, he's like, look, you know, I guess he must have talked to a couple of judges. He's like, hey, they got it close. Oh, Bud was like, oh, okay. I'll just go to mid. I'll be right back. And then two rounds just obliterated the guy. I think he had that in. And I think Canelo, what's crazy is Bud is older than Canelo, right? But Canelo looked like way older than Bud. And to be honest with you, where Bud's at right now, you know, Floyd's the best of his era, pound for pound, you know.
Or Pacquiao can't be far behind, though.
Can't be far behind. And you don't have to be undefeated to be pound for pound the best. You don't. Mm-hmm. I don't think you do. You got Andre Ward that retired, you know, undefeated. He was a great, but I think right now in Bud's era, he's the best pound for pound. He's the best fighter out there, period. There's not even a question. Now, if you want to start comparing all that, that's just like the Jordan and LeBron stuff. But where he's at right now, what's funny is this, is that, you know, I always like boxing. I look at boxing for different reasons as far as like how guys prepare. Like Lennox Lewis, never really, up until Haseem Rahman, who represented Baltimore, by the way, beat him, never reached his potential. But that's what sparked him, right? Then Emmanuel became his, you know, trainer, and they really started to test him. But how he mentally started to get to that place, right? Then he became very dominant. Klitschko got a little bit after him, but, you know, I would think if they rematched, I'd like Lennox Lewis. The funny thing about it is that when you look at boxing, that fight was bigger than just Bud and Canelo.
Yeah.
It's the two American, Mexican, like, they're the two most dominant, you know, countries or whatever you want to call them in boxing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had the, you know, emergence of like the Eastern European, where they come out.
Your Von Drago types.
Right. Just stoic, very businesslike. Right. And then you had some of, you know, you had some Japanese fighters that done some real, you know, good things, so forth and so on. And that's kind of been, that was like the new flair. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's just, you know, American and Mexican fighters of over the history of boxing. American fighters have the most world titles. Obviously, Mexican fighters or Latin descended fighters are second. But you saw the two Clash of the Titans, and then obviously Bud was able to do his thing.
And I think to your point from before as well, we did see a little bit of that scorebook cooking. Casual people had a bigger advantage for Bud than the judges did. What, two of them had it 116, 112, and one had it 115, 113.
Yeah.
Didn't necessarily pass the eye test. But either way, Nebraska's own Bud Crawford does indeed end up the champion, taking down Canelo Alvarez. First man since the four-belt era started in 2007 to become an undisputed champion in three different weight classes: junior, welterweight, welterweight, and super middleweight. Come over to the stream with us. That's where we're headed. We got Texans and Bucks coming up on the airwaves over the radio. Jay Foreman, Austin Norman, will be back on stream.
Love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Lux Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam hands-free from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Lux Cafe.